Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust excellence built on 40 years of experience. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more about the Zurich Master Trust.
Neil, thank you very much for that. We're returning now to the second of our panel discussions with another five candidates for the Midlands Northwest constituency who want to become members of the European Parliament. And we're going to be discussing agriculture, climate, migration and security. We're joined here in our Galway studio by Fianna Fáil Senator Lisa Chambers, Independent MEP Luke Ming Flanagan, Independent Ireland candidate Ciarán Mullooly, Independent candidate Peter Casey and Independent candidate Saoirse McHugh. And you're all very welcome to the programme this evening. Lisa Chambers, I might start with yourself. We're going to talk about agriculture and climate, and you said Eamon Ryan and the climate change agenda is placing regions such as the West and Northwest in a green straitjacket, and yet we find out yesterday we're on course to drastically miss all of our targets. So surely we need a climate change agenda, as you call it, more than ever.
Yeah, I mean, I want to tackle climate change, and I think, you know, in fairness to the Green Party, for a very long time they were the only party that were talking about climate change. But I think every party is green now. My frustration with Eamon Ryan is that he's consistently presenting green as red. Everything you can't do. Drive less, fly less, farm less, live less. And I think that's lacking vision and ambition for our country. And I'm specifically talking about offshore renewable energy. I met him more than a year ago on this. We have the second best wind corridor in the world sitting off the West Coast, 10 times Ireland's energy needs. Yet we haven't even started to map or do the environmental impact assessments for the West Coast. He's moving on the South and the East, and that's great. But what I've said is that's a very Dublin-centric approach, and it's leaving the region where I live without any progress. And if you compare that to Scotland, they finished mapping their coastline 3 years ago. ESB, our own semi-state, are investing in an offshore project in the UK, and France are investing $4 billion in an offshore project. So are Portugal, yeah. Spain, Norway. So what I'm asking more ambition in the space of energy.
Has responded to those claims from you that he's thwarting the development of floating offshore wind farms, and he says he'd love to see floating offshore wind farms deployable today, but he said it's not technically available for the West Coast. So to your point that Scotland has floating wind farms, he says they operate in wave heights of 10 metres, but that Ireland has 18 metre wave heights and limited safe shipping days off the West Coast, so we don't have the technology to do.
Yeah, and I think Eamon Ryan, and he knows full well that that's muddy in the waters. No one is saying that we're ready to install a wind farm off the West Coast tomorrow. If we were to start mapping and planning today, it will take us 5 to 7 years to be ready to install a project. Scotland have just recently granted planning permission for their first commercial project. We are already mapping the South and the East. All we're asking for is that he give the resources to map the West Coast.
Okay.
And don't just take my word.
That?
Sorry, Barry O'Sullivan from the Shannon Estuary Task Force, they published their report 2 years ago on floating offshore wind. Eamon Ryan's quoted on the day they published the report saying, build it now. It's 2 years and we can't even start the planning and the mapping process.
I know you're not a representative of the Green Party, but just in terms of your green credentials, do you think this is something that could and should have been done sooner?
Well, I'm no expert on offshore wave heights to do with renewable energy either. Obviously, I would like to see as fast as possible mapping being done. But I think the crucial thing about renewable energies is not just that they be state owned so that they're, you know, brought into service for the public good, but also how the energy markets work. And Spain is trying to do this at a European level, are changed so that the energy markets are focused on the public good. Like, and this really only changed in the 90s rather than on profit, because otherwise renewable deployment is going to be really difficult, and our grid as well. And
so are you talking about nationalising energy suppliers?
Well, or going forward, building state-owned renewables, but more crucially, because even when we have state-owned renewables, they're still run for profit, to be run for the public good. So we're prioritising the public good.
Peter Casey, I looked on your website, I couldn't find anything about climate. What are you proposing on climate?
What I've said earlier is that obviously there is climate change and I'm prepared to accept it. I don't think that carbon tax is the solution to it. Carbon tax just simply taxes the people who can least afford it, you know. And if you're living in rural Ireland, you've got no alternative but to fill up your
tank. That's what you're against. So what are you proposing on climate?
With climate, I mean, I don't think we've bigger issues than renewable energy at the moment. We've got a migration crisis at the moment.
We'll talk about migration shortly.
That we need
climate,
to get into.
Do you have any policies? Is there anything you're supportive of that
you'd
like to see happen at EU level?
I'm not. Climate is not. I mean, prepared to accept that there is climate change and we need to take action. So,
okay. Kieran, do you have any climate change policies?
It's always thrown out.
Just accepting that it exists.
There was a bit of an issue in your last thing about, you know, the farming thing. The farming is always blamed or part in climate going all wrong. And there's one classic example of this, and our government has failed to take it seriously. That's the ability of farmers to use their waste and create energy in a proper way, anaerobic digesters. This has been offered by the farming community for the last 5 or 6 years. Eamon Ryan came in and said we're going to have 25 of them at one stage. You know how many we have? We have 2, because our planning system is not up to scratch. It doesn't work. And all over the country, there's been difficulty after difficulty. Farmers are coming forward. Mm. They're being very clear about it. We'll play our part. We want to see this planning structure. We want to see the red tape disappear. Like so many aspects of farming, the red tape is causing huge difficulties. And that's the issue, Sarah, in terms of farming. They need a chance to. They will build them. They will build them. They will put the farm waste to that use. And in return, you will find the carbon emissions will go down. That'll be our contribution.
Will they reach our targets when all that is done?
Well, I think the key to it is firstly, positive initial at that. The second thing is, I'm serious about this, transition. I think that's our difficulty. I think we can reach our targets if we take the transition period seriously. What drives people silly around the country is that they try to play their part. You take today, if you go off to try and retrofit your home, you're going to put in some solar and a heat pump, you call SSIA and you'll ask them about the grant. You know what they'll tell you? There's a 2-year wait for the grant. Yeah. As usual, the Greens rush ahead without the infrastructure has to be put there.
Digestion and saying once we put all these plants in place that will bring down emissions. But I'm asking you, will we meet our targets? Because you will, if you were listening to our last panel, you'll have heard me talk about what Jack is saying, which is that even if we bring in all these additional measures, won't meet our targets.
And Sarah, I answered the question, only if we have the infrastructure in place. How can people at home reduce the emissions in their own home but they can't get the infrastructure? They can't get the grant at the end of the day. Fair and even worse again, if it comes to a boiler grant, you won't get it at all because Eamon Ryan considers there shouldn't be a grant for an old boiler.
The elephant in the room is a source of energy. If we were to harness offshore renewables as a solution, we would have an opportunity to green agriculture, fuel our homes.
Luke, you want to come in? And then come to yourself, Sir.
Yeah, I do want to come in. And you're on about the national herd and about the idea of reducing it. And I'd actually agree with reducing the dairy herd, and I'd have no problem with that. But what we've had happen in the last couple of years in Ireland, incentivised by 50 million euro from Europe and 50 million euro from Ireland, is to reduce the suckler herd, the most extensive beef production that we have with the lowest level of inputs and done in a far more sustainable way. So we definitely need to reduce the herd, but we need to reduce the dairy herd. When it comes to other sectors, people want to transition, but the problem is people cannot afford to transition and we don't have a just transition. They had a scheme initially where they offered 110% grants to retrofit houses, which basically meant that people could move out for a deep refit and they'd be able to afford to pay it, and everyone wanted to take it up. Okay. But we need to
I want to stop you for a second, just because you're saying we do need to reduce the national dairy herd.
Yes.
Are you saying that? You're out on the campaign trail. Are you telling farmers when you're meeting them, you need to reduce the national dairy herd?
Sure, why wouldn't I tell them? That's what I believe.
And what are they saying to you?
People who are in the dairy sector aren't happy about it, but I'm not out there just to say stuff that makes people happy. I'm out there to tell people what I think. And if we want a just transition for farmers...
Unless we start looking after the farmers, there won't be any farmers in 20 years' time.
You know, I did have a point to
farmers
make.
Will be like priests. There won't be any. They're just leaving. Everyone's leaving the farmlands.
Yeah.
The farmers.
What's your policy, though, Peter?
We need to support the farmers.
What does that mean?
Give them a minimum guaranteed wage. You know. Farmers need
to get paid. Okay, so is this a policy you've just decided on? Because didn't have policy 5 minutes ago.
I was at a meeting with the farmers there on Monday night, and the average age of the farmers was like over 70, and they're dying.
So we need a minimum national wage. How would you fight for that at European level?
I'm not there yet. I will know when I get there, but
okay,
I'm a businessman.
I'm
a businessman. I look on everything and how do we keep this business going, and what's happening is the farmers are actually getting...
So minimum national wage. How much would it cost? How much would you pay?
And, well, I would think it'd have to be a minimum of about 40,000 a year minimum.
And how much would that cost?
You know, I don't know.
Okay. Sorry, you want to get back in, Luke?
Yeah, what we need to do for farmers is we've got to pay them for the production of public goods. And there's a lot of talk about this. But when it came to the Nature Restoration Law and when it came to the last cap, there was no money for paying for public goods. And if you look at the value of cap and where it's gone from since 2001, in real terms, it's reduced by 60%. Mm. We're at about 1.5 billion this year. If we stuck with inflation, it should be about 3.4 billion. And you're asking for sums. And what could you give farmers? In the next reform of the cap, which takes place in 2027, what I will be proposing is that you have a mandatory 22% front loading, which will guarantee the vast majority this money will go to farms on less than 32 hectares. Okay. And that would result in an income of about 25,000 euros a year for each and every one of these farmers, which would free them up to do a lot of these things that would put a lot of demands
on
them. But also what needs to be done is guarantee them a fair price.
Thank you, Luke. I
just wanted to just touch on a few things Ciarán was talking about with anaerobic digestion. Like, I think there's a... So what we've had in Ireland for years now is... I think I'm very short-term planning, especially around agriculture. Like Simon Coveney, at the end of the milk quota, basically said farmers don't have to worry about emissions. Chagas admitted they had never thought what would happen to dairy calves. People have been warning for years about the nitrogen derogation, that the water quality wasn't good enough. And we have this thing where politicians will say, keep going, expand, rent land, it's all good and fine. And then when reality collides, it's fine for them, but people have really, you know, invested in stuff. And I just worry with anaerobic digestion because, you know, it's really successful in countries where animals are primarily housed most of the time. They're looking at anaerobic digestion in Ireland that will, first of all, be built by developers and private companies, and farmers will be contracted to provide...
Just let me finish the point, I'll come back to you.
Will be contracted to provide grass, feed for the anaerobic digestion, which is fine, except... What will hopefully happen will be that electricity prices will be decoupled from gas prices. So renewable energy will get much lower. And then what? You've left people, all of a sudden, people can't pay for gas because it's too expensive.
But also there's biodiversity issues.
And I think we have to be really careful that we don't have, when we're addressing things like carbon, that we don't then, you know, really damage biodiversity.
All right, Ciarán.
Two quick points. I mean, my essential point was slate the farmer, it demonised the farmer. That was the policy. The farmers came forward in communities like mine and said, we run a community-owned scheme. We run it ourselves. This was offered by the government to support at least 500 megawatts of community-based renewable energy. You know what's happened? They run into a brick wall with regard to connections to the national grid. Again, a failure by our department, a failure by Eamon Ryan. Our ESB and Eirgrid will not do multiple connections. It's costing a fortune. That's why it doesn't make sense.
You tweeted recently that you want to give farm inspectors. You want farmers to be given a month's notice for farm inspections.
Absolutely.
Does that not defeat the purpose?
No, it doesn't. Because if you read the full measure involved, if you're doing a farm inspection, in some cases there will be an issue of animal health. That's not part of our 1 month yellow card. We're saying if it's an issue of the welfare of animal, you go straight through. The rest of the inspections are regard at the end of the day to regulation essentially. So there's no reason why you shouldn't have a three weeks notice to do it. What happens in most of those cases, if you're on the farm like me, you've got together perhaps over a couple of hundred head of cattle. You've got to get the physical part of it is the hardest problem.
But should you not be ready for an inspection anytime?
But if it's critical on animal welfare. It's
not
critical. Every farmer knows this. It's not critical in any other areas.
Look, under the CAP strategic plan regulation. Each state, and Belgium has two, we get to produce our own strategic plan. And within that regulation, there is an opportunity for the government to avail of agroforestry and polluticulture. Now, the amount of money that they put towards agroforestry has been minimal, and they don't have any schemes for polluticulture. And with polluticulture, you can farm in wetlands without draining it, and you can sequester carbon, and you can produce a product off it as well. But farmers can't go into that area unless they are guaranteed a market for a lot of the products they could produce from polluticulture, but that actually hasn't happened.
Right,
when people talk about the cap being unwieldy, just remember the plan we have in Ireland was decided on in Ireland, and if it's too complicated we need to look at governments and ask them why couldn't they simplify it?
Yeah, I've been meeting with farmers like all the candidates on the campaign trail. They want acknowledgement for the work that they're already doing, less catastrophising and removing hope from the equation. They're doing pretty good, actually. And the report that came out yesterday, you'd swear it was the worst in the world. Agriculture will reduce its emissions. Yes, it won't hit the 25% according to the EPA, but actually farming organisations think they can do more. And the biomethane strategy announced by the minister was not included in that. So there is scope to do more than what was in that report yesterday. CAP, when it was first enacted, was about food.
Do you agree
food,
with Luke instantly about, on the herd, just out of interest?
No.
No.
Okay. But CAP, when it was first enacted, was about food production at good quality but good prices. There's a huge environmental arm to
all
that
right.
now. Farmers need to be paid for the environmental actions properly.
I want to move
there
on.
Needs to be a fair transition. But food security is the thing that we have to look at. We have to feed people as well. We are good at agriculture. We are an agricultural country. And there are lots of sectors depending on it, not just farmers, but all the ancillary businesses
all right.
and rural
communities.
With the Climate and Biodiversity Fund,
Sorry, Luke,
none of that's
to
going
on.
To go to farmers.
I'm moving
so
on to the issue of migration and immigration. And I come to yourself, Peter Casey, on this, because you just said today that both the EU authorities and the Irish government need to start playing hardball, quote, with the UK over the ongoing tent fiasco. And you want the European Union to demand that Westminster carry out passport control checks on all flights and ferries from Scotland, England and Wales to any port in the Republic of Ireland. I put it to you that that's not playing hardball. That's just shouting.
I wasn't shouting. We're being invaded. You know, 30,000 people have come in illegally into the country.
I'll ask you not to use emotive language around
well,
a topic that involves vulnerable people.
I'm just saying
people.
We are...
It is emotive
30,000 people have come into the country illegally. We don't know who they are. We don't have any background checks on them. They could be murderers, rapists, for all we know.
Sorry,
we don't
I'm going to stop you right there because what you're spreading there is... potential hate against a potentially vulnerable community. So
There's
I'll ask
no
you
potential.
Not
it's
to suggest. Yeah, I'll ask you not to suggest that people coming into this country
I'm
are
saying that they
murderers
need,
or rapists
we should
or
not let people
illegal,
into
though.
The country.
You can
if,
come into the
we
country.
Should not let people into the country if they do not apply.
Okay,
properly.
In terms of what you want to do to try and address that, you're saying that Westminster needs to carry out passport control checks on all flights, as I said, and ferries from Scotland, England, and Wales to any port in the Republic of Ireland. You say that the EU needs to start playing hardball. How does the EU force Westminster to do what you're saying? That's why I'm saying it's
EU,
shouting into the void. What
I'm
you're
not
saying.
Shouting.
Into the
EU,
void.
The EU could easily, if they were serious about tackling the migration problem, they could set up assessment centres in the hotspots around the world and check out there, carry out the validity of the asylum seekers' claims, and if they are valid,
you misunderstand my question. I'm asking you, how does the EU play hardball with the UK, as you've suggested needs to happen today, to force Westminster to start doing passport checks at their ports on the way into Ireland? How does the EU play hardball to make that happen?
The EU has a responsibility to Ireland, and Ireland has been left high and dry because the United Kingdom is offloading and allowing migrants to come in, illegal migrants to come in through Northern Ireland. Mm. And according to the Justice Minister, 85% of the people coming in...
The point I'm trying to make to you, Peter, is the EU can't force the UK to do anything.
The EU
so can you tell
the,
me how you would suggest the EU plays hardball?
The EU can. The EU can actually work with Ireland and the United Kingdom, and the EU can actually stop people getting into Ireland. You know, so we could put, if Ireland and the United Kingdom had identical migration policies, then it wouldn't matter whether they came from Cork or whether they came from
but
Cardiff.
That's not the situation we're in, Saoirse.
Well, just to say that he keeps using the term illegal, as in people coming in illegally. People are coming in to seek international protection. It's not up to people on Facebook or Twitter or Peter to decide who is and isn't coming in with a valid reason to. You're allowed to arrive and you're allowed to arrive without documentation to seek international
protection.
Well, that
protection. Is illegal to arrive without documentation.
To seek international protection?
Yes, it is illegal and people are being put in prison for that. You're still allowed to seek international protection if you arrive without documentation, but it is against the law to do so.
Okay, well, it shouldn't be. People are fleeing dreadful circumstances. I think it's kind of... Like, I don't think the EU could play much more hardball with people seeking to migrate. Like, it was 8 years ago, the body of Alan Kurdi washed up in Turkey. Mm. And since then, the guts of 30,000 people have drowned in the Mediterranean. Like, it is the most dangerous border in the world. And to suggest that we should go even further than that, what people are suggesting is that more people should be made die. That's it. What the suggestion is.
We should put troops on the border to stop people
troops
coming
on
over
the border. Troops on the border.
Kieran, I'm making sure everybody has enough time, okay? Kieran, where are you at when it comes to
migration? I don't think anybody would agree with Peter, we should put troops on the border. Yeah. No, if I can finish, Peter. That's the first thing I'd say.
Well, actually, Fianna Fáil agrees with that.
Absolutely not. I think in the first instance, we need Sarah to have a bit. We need to have a bit of reality. Peter, if I could, Peter.
No.
I think in the first situation, we need to have a bit of reality about where we are. we have an election in the UK.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to change before the 4th of July. Nothing. Regardless of whether the EU comes knocking on the door or the Irish come knocking on the door. I think the discussion should start after that. Probably with a Labour government in the UK should start with them at that stage. The EU have
and
a number
of... And in the meantime,
have,
are you supportive of checks in the border?
Absolutely not. Absolutely
okay, are you supportive
not.
Of the EU
have
what
I want We to, have them already.
What I want to, what
on,
I want to see...
on it as a check on the border.
We have them, but he says he's not supportive of them. That's
what I want to see instead is a migration system...
You can't be a little bit pregnant.
Peter, let him speak, please.
What I would like to see in the intervening period is a system that's fit for purpose. That's the big issue for the Irish people.
Okay, what does that look like? Are you supportive of the EU migration pact?
Something that's fast, fair and firm would be.
I'm sure everyone wants to see that, Kieran, but what does that look like?
But it's not been done. That's the problem.
So you
we don't have enough people in the Department of Justice doing the job. We don't have passport checks in the right areas. We don't have the system operating.
There's no point to me saying that. We've said
the government has said.
You'll
see the change of mind in the last few weeks by our government. They said we were doing this all along. Now they admit we haven't got the people in place to do it. We can't change anything until we put the people in place.
Are you supportive of the EU migration pact?
No, I'm not. No, not because it tends to give the EU the power to decide at what level we actually stop or we allow people into this country, and I don't think that would be a good idea.
Okay, so how
I've been one of the people.
Can I ask you a question? That's fine, you're not supportive of it. How do you propose we return migrants to other EU countries if we're not part of the EU migration pact?
We go back to the system of a system which is fit for purpose. We bring them into the...
We've opted out of the EU system now, and we have migrants coming here from other EU countries.
We have our own passport controls.
We have to let them in under the Geneva Convention, but we're not now part of the EU migration pact, which allows us to return those people if they arrive in another EU country to that EU country. So how do you propose we
form partnership agreements with other countries?
That's what the EU migration pact happens
all the time. We decide we do not want the EU to set the actual quotas. That's the part we're saying we're not. That's the part I'm disagreeing with.
All right. So let me just get clear on your policy here.
But I think you're jumping the point. Hold on, please. I just want clarity.
I'll pause you for a second. I just want clarity. So you're saying we opt out of the EU migration pact, and then when people arrive here who've actually landed in another EU country first, under the EU migration pact, we'd be able to return them. Instead of that, we're going to start doing individual deals with all the countries in Europe. All the countries in Europe that would basically mimic what the EU migration pact
we're
does.
We're going to opt out of the EU migration pact insofar as it allows the EU to set quotas. That's what I said.
I just like the idea of having troops on the border. I grew up with troops on the border.
But you want them
but
there
this is
same.
An emergency, and it just requires emergency treatment.
All of the focus, is how do we stop people coming here? But none of the focus is on that's an end of pipe solution. None of the focus is on why they want to come here in the first place, and what can the EU do about the reason why they want to come in the first place? One of the reasons they want to come is because there are bombs raining down on them in their country. One thing that the EU can do is stop exporting, as they did in 2022, €162 billion
in bombs in Nigeria
every year. And when you look at EU policy when it comes to exporting milk, you look at Senegal. If you're a farmer in Senegal, it will cost you nearly €1 to produce a litre of milk, whereas it's been imported from the EU at 50 cents. So that individual farmer is far less likely to be able to live and stay in that country, whether it's Senegal or Nigeria. But one of the things that I'm meeting when I go around and I'm talking to people, and I remember back in 2008, we had just as high an immigration level. But the difference back then was the government had houses built. There were more services there.
Can I ask you about your position on the EU migration pact, if you don't mind?
I voted against it because I actually don't think it'll work. I think the idea that you're going to pay some despotic leader to hoard people and keep people in detention centres on the edge of Europe is cruel to those immigrants. But also, it leaves us open to blackmail. It leaves us open to be threatened by these leaders in the future if there's instability in their country and they threaten, just like Erdogan did, that I will now release these people, these poor unfortunate people into Europe. So it isn't a long-term solution.
It might sound good, but it won't work. All right,
we need to make it possible for people to stay at home, just like my family did and just like these people want
But we need rich people to pay for this,
not the poor people in Irish society.
Lisa Chambers, you say there's nothing stopping us from sending home migrants who break the law, but actually there is something stopping us because the Geneva Convention forbids us from sending home migrants who break the law if there's a serious risk that they face persecution in their home countries.
Well, that's a caveat, but there is the European Community's Free Movement of Persons Regulations, which allows us to return EU citizens to other EU member states. We've actually had removal orders issued for 634 persons since 2012.
That's not what you were talking about, is it?
If I can finish. We have the Immigration Act as well, which does allow us, where there is a serious criminal offence committed, to deport a person. Obviously, if the person has come from somewhere where the place has been bombed, or or they could risk losing their lives if being deported, but that's not everybody. Peter, can you stop interrupting? And nobody agrees with your position anyways. But so you can. This is already government policy. We already do this. And since 2012, over 1,000 non-EU citizens have also been deported where there's been serious offences committed. I agree with that.
I wonder, why is it something that you're bringing up?
Because I was asked a question. And I responded in a press release, in a press call.
Well, this is also part of a Fianna Fáil document, though, wasn't it? And we have seen from Gardaí that there is no evidence that there's any link between migrants and crime.
Sorry, I'm not suggesting that every person that comes to the country, whether they are a migrant, legal or illegal, is a criminal. Of course I'm not. But the question was asked, and I did answer, and we already do this. If somebody commits a serious indictable offence, the Minister for Justice has the power to issue a removal order if they're an EU citizen, or a deportation order, and we've done it and are doing it every year. However, I will come back to the migration issue. I do want to say that there has to be a humane approach, and I agree with what's been said. People are fleeing war, persecution, effects of climate change and economic devastation as well. So we have to have a fair system that's robust, but we also have to ensure...
And do you think the EU migration pact is fair, given that there will be arbitrary detention, according to Helen McEntee, as a last resort, but it'll be there?
I think after spending 10 years negotiating it, the fact that there are people on the left and right not happy and we've landed somewhere in the middle is probably the best place we're going to get to.
Okay, do I
think
it'll work
perfectly?
And can I stop talking, Peter, for a second? Can I make the point as well? Can I make the point as well
that I do?
Thank you, Ming. I do agree as well that, you know, we have to have a robust system that's rules based. But I also think
I want to ask you very briefly, because I want to get to Saoirse. Do you agree with your party colleague Barry Cowan, who's calling for more Garda checkpoints on the border?
I will come to that. Can I just say...
Can you answer that question because I want to move on?
But I didn't get to answer the EU Migration Pact. The reason I support the Migration Pact is I think we are better off working with other EU member states. If we were to be outside
of that...
that's
fine.
I do think there would be nothing to deter other countries from sending people to Ireland, which is what the UK are already doing because they're outside the European Union.
More checkpoints on the border?
Absolutely not. When I was the opposition spokesperson on Brexit, I spent a number of years from the opposition benches ensuring that there was no hard border on the island of Ireland. We fought long and hard during the Brexit process to make sure that that didn't happen.
But so there should be no. What is Fianna Fáil saying to the voters in the Dublin Midwest constituency? If you vote in Barry Cowan, there will be more checkpoints. If you vote in Lisa Chambers, there won't be.
But sorry, sir, I'm here today as Lisa Chambers, the Midlands Northwest candidate in my region.
For Fianna Fáil.
For Fianna Fáil.
What's the party position?
But I'm giving you my position. The party position is not looking for a hard border. As I said,
I'm not asking about a hard border. Is a hard border what Barry Cowan is saying or what Lisa Chambers is saying?
You'll have to ask Barry Cowan to clarify his comments, but I'm very clear. There's to be no checks on the border.
What I did say is that there need to be checks at
the entry points coming in.
Make a comment, like more generally, I suppose, on the doors and everything. There's a load of issues, a load of really domestic issues being rolled up into migration, like housing, lack of services, healthcare, education, disability support. All of these things are being kind of rolled up and blamed on people seeking international protection. And a lot of these, you know, even the men sleeping in tents, like that is a result of a housing crisis and a domestic terror campaign where the supply of accommodation...
Would you let her speak, please, everybody?
The supply of accommodation sort of basically dried up because of this campaign of arson. And I think it's become very inflamed. But like, you know, the fact of the matter is housing, healthcare, cost of living, that's really kind of, when you get down to it, that's the nuts and bolts, and that's often issues there.
But it's also a huge, big increase, isn't it, in migration?
Yes.
That has really caused pressure on
our
system.
Yes, and isn't it awful that people have to flee?
It is. So how would you propose to deal with it?
I would propose that the government, I suppose it wouldn't be an MEP kind of competency, but that the government resource properly the processing so that people aren't waiting for years, waiting in direct provision for years, so people can move through the system.
So that would be part of the EU Migration Pact, which does have a significant amount of funding to resource exactly what you're talking
about. And we can also do it.
So are you supportive of that?
Of the EU Migration Pact? No.
Okay, but
we have loads of funding. I do not think anything justifies border externalisation and paying for detention camps in the likes of Libya, Tunisia and Egypt. There's nothing to justify that.
All right. Do stay with us. Our panel today are Ciarán Mullooly, Saoirse McHugh, Peter Casey, Luke Ming Flanagan and Lisa Chambers. We'll be back after the break. We're going to be talking about security and neutrality.
Tweet at DriveTime RTE.
You're welcome back. Our panel are still with us. Lisa Chambers, Luke Ming-Flanagan, Peter Casey, Saoirse McHugh and Ciarán Mullooly. And Peter, I might come to yourself first when it comes to, I suppose, the broader issues around security and neutrality. And obviously Israel and Gaza is a big issue at the moment. And you say the answer to that is a three-state solution of Israel, Gaza and the West Bank. I just wonder, have you spoken to anyone in Palestine to find out if they're in favour of that?
I've been to Israel and I've spent time there. I've been to the West Bank, of course. Mm. I wasn't able to get into Gaza. We're not a neutral country. We take sides. We chose Ukraine over Russia, and we choose America over almost everyone else, as we should do, because they pay 80% of all our corporate bills, you know, our corporate tax bills. So the reason I said a three-state solution was because the Palestinians in the West Bank do not get on with the Palestinians in Gaza, and the ones in Gaza are much more radical. They've been more radicalized because of Israel's actions.
Palestinian representatives have you spoken to that is in favor of this?
They're 73 miles apart, right?
Yeah, okay.
So there's a big, and they don't particularly get on. And the ones in the Gaza are much more radical.
Right. I said the solution is to have
a totally separate independent country in Gaza, a totally separate independent country on the West Bank, and have the Arab states fund it.
And did you speak
America,
to any leaders
of course,
in Palestine?
Not about leaders. I spent time in the West Bank and I walked and I talked to a lot of Palestinians.
So my question is, right, is there any support for this, your solution, among Palestinians?
I've never heard anyone else talk about it. I mean, anytime I talk to people about it, they say that could work. I mean, the only problem with it is that the Palestinians in Gaza are committed to the elimination of the State of Israel, as is Iran. So, you know, that's the problem.
I don't understand how you can come up with an international policy for a really divided, complex area in the Middle East mm-hmm. without speaking
well,
to the
what's
people
your solution?
Who would actually...
Should we come up with Sinwar and
Abbas do not get on. The two of them don't get on. They don't speak to each other. They don't communicate with each other. Christ. And you want to have them all together as one...
I'm not running for Europe, so it's not my position to come up with solutions. I'm just interested in how you came up with the solution.
Because I think outside the box. That's what I do as a businessman.
Ciarán, where do you stand on what's going on with Israel and...
I didn't go to Israel like Peter, but I did watch what happened in October, and I did see the pictures after the incredible, horrific response and the loss of life and the loss of children and what's happened. I mean, nobody can just sit here and say we have nothing to do with this. That's the first thing we have to do. We have to play a part in all this. I suppose specifically what we do is as a nation. Look, what happened this week in terms of recognising Palestine was certainly one way of responding to it, probably a positive way of doing it. But at the end of the day, people in our situation, we really limit what we can doing this issue. I'm saying that the UN is the key to dealing with this situation. I think over the years, Ireland has played a very important part to the United Nations peacekeeping measures. We're still people in there who are also quite in danger at the moment as well. I think we have to be very careful, but we should work on what we can do to the UN. We shouldn't fool ourselves for a moment that we're the United States of America or we're Russia
right,
or somewhere.
So
we're a major power.
We can between Eamon Ryan stopping letting the US military use Shannon and is it Peter Burke, who's the Minister for Trade and Enterprise? Mm-hmm. He can stop giving any licences to dual-use goods going to Israel. Like, we can stop those things immediately. Like, whatever about whatever solution might be there in the future, I think the most imperative thing is that we do all we can. And of course, then, what you would hope for is who MEPs vote for as a Commission President will affect, hopefully, sanctions on Israel to try and bring pressure on them.
Can we stop dual-use goods? And why haven't we, Lisa Chambers?
Sorry, say that again.
Can we stop dual-use goods going to Israel immediately, as Saoirse says?
We're part of the European Union, so in terms of trade, I think it's through the Israel-EU trade agreement.
Not
and
sure.
in terms of, can I just
really.
Correct the point as well around Shannon Airport? There are strict conditions attaching to the diplomatic clearance applied to US planes going through there. They must be unarmed, not carrying arms, and not part of any military exercise. And that's the position. So,
what did you say?
They're not inspected.
There are strict rules that the US abide by. And that
how do we know if we don't inspect them?
Because that's an agreement between two countries, and I would trust the authorities to deal with that and the Irish government, but that is the position.
Well, we weren't trusting with Brexit. There was inspections, wasn't there?
In what way?
In terms of food coming into the country, we had inspections. We have inspections.
In terms of the UK and the government there, unfortunately, we haven't been dealing with, I think, serious politicians.
So we can't trust the British government, but we can trust the US government.
But there was evidence during that point that they were saying one thing and doing another, and we can see what Rishi Sunak has done more recently.
The US has said one thing and done another as well, plenty of times.
The position from the Irish government is that in order to get diplomatic clearance to go through Shannon Airport, you must be unarmed, not carrying arms,
and
not part of
military. Should we inspect those planes at the very least?
That's not part of how it works. There's a diplomatic clearance there, and there's respect between two countries. Mm. and that's how we work together.
Shouldn't we go back through it all, though?
We talk about what we can do as MEPs. If any of us is elected here to the European Parliament, in July, we will get an opportunity to vote for the next Commission President. And the one biggest thing that Ireland can do is, regardless of what group you're in, do not support Ursula von der Leyen. Because when she stood up after October the 7th, and it was horrific, but history didn't begin on that day. But when she stood up and gave unconditional support for Israel, she basically greenlighted what has subsequently happened. I have went after Commissioner Dombrovskis on this EU-Israel agreement, and it came as a result of 5 TDs writing him a letter demanding an end to this agreement. He didn't reply to any of them. I had to chase him around several committees, and he needs to listen. And the EU does need to listen, because it is damaging the EU's reputation all around the world. Now we are associated with genocide, and if this woman is re-elected, we will have made it official. Okay, it's just fine and dandy what they're doing in Gaza.
Can I just get clarity out of interest? Is anyone here supporting Ursula von der Leyen?
Well, now that Ming said I shouldn't vote for her, I'll probably give her strong consideration.
I think we should
is that a serious answer, Peter? Just
what
out of
we
interest.
Can do at the end of the day, Sarah. We should concentrate
on what
we can do.
Sorry, I just want to get clarity. Are you voting for Ursula von der Leyen, Peter?
What can we do as MEPs? There is a trade agreement. We should tear it up. That's what I'm saying.
Maybe let him say exactly what he said.
I haven't made my decision yet. I'll make my decision. What I'm going to do is give the people.
I said because I
did not
want you to vote for.
I will be making
ridiculous.
My recommendation. I'm going to let the people
like
of Midlands. I'm going
to
let the people of Midlands Northwest vote on it, and they'll decide.
Kieran, you said we should tear off the trade agreement.
There's a new agreement with Israel.
I understand.
With Israel. In terms of what we can do in terms of the Parliament, we're only 14 in a Parliament.
But the EU
when we go to the Parliament, we have an opportunity to work with our partners there in terms of our groupings, even, and try and have a direct. Well, you won't until you actually get there. If you're going to have a Parliament going forward the next time, if you're going to have a Parliament, it's going to be agreed on something.
Can I just make a point in terms of the role, I suppose, that we might play, any of us that are elected as MEPs, in terms of EU foreign policy? I do think that if the EU is serious about being a voice for peace and conflict resolution, if we look at our reaction to what happened in Ukraine and Russia's invasion, we had no problem slapping sanctions on Russia because it was warranted.
Yeah.
And Ursula von der Leyen said that if you bomb key infrastructure like water and electricity, that's a crime and it should be sanctioned. We didn't apply the same standards to what Israel have done in Gaza. And I think that lacks credibility from an EU perspective. So the foreign policy needs to be consistent and the same values applied across the board.
All right, sure.
Yeah, just in terms of tearing up the Israel trade agreement, that would be coming from the council, really. And this is why the commissioner is so important, because it would be the likes of the commissioner or Borrell who could ask the council to look at the trade agreement.
Okay,
the
and you'd like that addressed.
Yeah, they would need to immediately put sanctions on Israel. Like
what would those sanctions look like?
Unbelievable. Trade sanctions, they should have no access to EU funding while they're committing genocide.
Yeah, and it maybe stop Germany supplying weapons to yet another genocide. I mean, I lived there for years and I heard the phrase, we will never forget. Well, do you know what? Their leaders will want to start remembering, because this is another genocide.
All right, Peter Casey, do you agree with that? And also, would you tear up, as Kieran is saying, the Israel-EU trade agreement?
What I've said is, when it comes to making votes in the European Parliament, I'm going to give the people in Midlands Northwest the right to decide, and I will vote as per the directives from my... I'm going to have an app.
What if they don't all agree?
It's the majority.
Sorry,
vote.
Can you clarify that to me? You're going to have an app.
What if they don't
agree?
I'm interested in hearing.
I believe we need to return sovereignty to the people of Midlands Northwest. When elected, I will give the people of Midlands Northwest. I'm going to have 3 different apps: one for the farmers, one for the fishermen, and one for everyone else,
and one for each state as well.
And they will vote on a secure app, and they will just
And you'll tell them every EU resolution.
I will offer the people of Midlands Northwest the opportunity to actually
vote
tell
in
me
every
how to
EU
vote.
Resolution. Well, that is an interesting option. I think we're out of time. Thank you all so much for joining us this evening.
Interesting is a good way of putting it.
Who do we have? We have Lisa Chambers, Luke Ming Flanagan, Peter Casey, Saoirse McHugh and Ciara Mullooly. Thank you all so much. I'm just being reminded there that before we conclude this evening's discussions, there are of course other candidates standing in the Midlands Northwest election, and that is Justin Barrett from the National Party, Niall Blaney from Fianna Fáil, Anthony Cahill from the Irish People, Nina Carberry from Fine Gael, Barry Cowan from Fianna Fáil, Stephen Garland, Independent, Michelle Gildernew, Sinn Féin, Charlotte Keenan, Independent, Herman Kelly, the Irish Freedom Party, Fergal Landy, the Labour Party, Margaret McGuire of Ireland First, Brian O'Boyle, People Before Profit, Daniel Pocock from Independent, James Reynolds, the National Party, Michelle Smith, Independent, Gerry Waters, Independent, and John Waters, Independent. And just to be clear, that Barry Cowan has contacted the programme to say that he has not called for a hard border. He likes the people he seeks to represent and doesn't want a hard border. He says, I've called for random checks by GNIB, as we saw last week. These can and did detect some illegal entrants and also asylum seekers that are already in the UK. Such work needs to be heightened so as to act as a deterrent to such efforts. I called for random checks by GNIB and not a hard border. I'm just happy to clarify that point. Thank you all very much for joining us this evening. All right.